Thank you for choosing to take a self-guided, GPS-enabled audio tour with Free Tours by Foot. We believe in operating quality tours that are affordable to everybody, regardless of their budget, and we hope that you enjoy your tour with us today. You have chosen to come along on our Harry Potter self-guided tour, a walk that will take you into the magical wizarding world of the world's best-loved book series. This tour will have you standing in the exact spots where many of the movie's most iconic scenes were filmed, as well as along the streets and alleyways mentioned throughout the books, and everywhere in between. We will be traveling via foot, with a single underground journey at the end, so please be aware that you will need a travel card or Oyster card to complete the entire walk. If you take a look on our app page, you will find a link to our posts about getting an Oyster card and navigating the London Underground. On the tour today, you can expect to walk nearly 4.5 miles, or just over 7 kilometers. The tour will last, on average, around 3 hours, although this may change depending on your walking pace or stops you wish to make along the way. This tour will also take you to London's premier food market, Borough Market, where you'll have an excellent chance to stop and have some delicious lunch. For guests with mobility issues, or those with prams or strollers, there are 3 items to note. Firstly, there'll be many cobbled streets on the walk, so do be careful. Secondly, there is 1 set of stairs to go down to get off the Millennium Bridge, but there's a wheelchair-accessible lift by the steps. And lastly, the London Underground right at the end will take you to Angel Station, home to the longest escalators in London, but unfortunately no lift. You may wish, instead, to swap the final 2 stops of the tour. To do that, take the Underground and go 1 station further north than Angel Station to King's Cross Station. There you can see Platform 9 and 3 quarters, St. Pancras, and then leave the railway station to turn left onto Pentonville Road. Continue eastwardly and this will take you to number 12 Grimald Place. This GPS self-guided Harry Potter walking tour begins at Liverpool Street Station. There are 2 exits to the station. You will want to take the exit for Bishopsgate. If you are walking, simply get to the Liverpool Street Station entrance on Bishopsgate itself. Once you are standing on Bishopsgate with your back to Liverpool Street Station, turn right onto Bishopsgate itself. Continue walking in this direction until you reach Leadenhall Street, which will be on your left. Turn left here, then cross the street so you can make the next right, which will be Whittington Avenue. This path will take you into the heart of Leadenhall Market. As you continue forward, this pathway turns into Lime Street. Stop once you're standing in the middle of the market. Leadenhall Market has sat in this location since the 14th century. However, most of what you can see today dates from the late 1800s. These beautiful covered pathways of Leadenhall Market stood in for Diagon Alley in the first Harry Potter film. Shortly before Lime Street curves to the left, you will see the entrance for Bull's Head Passage on your right. Walk until you see the blue door of number 42 on the right-hand side. Take a look at 42 Bull's Head Passage, and you will spot a storefront for an optician, and it is this shopfront, painted blue, that was used to serve as the entrance to Leaky Cauldron in the Philosopher's Stone. There's a lovely shot in the film, which we've included a link so you can watch, of Hagrid and Harry walking through the market and entering the Leaky Cauldron through this blue door. However, for subsequent Potter films, the entrance to the Leaky Cauldron was filmed in Borough Market. There are a few reasons why the filmmakers chose to change the location. Firstly, when the Leaky Cauldron next appears on screen in The Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry arrives via the night bus. These Victorian covered arches and alleyways couldn't accommodate the props needed for that scene, whereas Borough Market had plenty of space for a bus to drive through. Secondly, the first 2 films were directed by Christopher Columbus, director of films such as Mrs. Doubtfire and Home Alone, and his version of the world of Harry Potter was a light, family-friendly, colorful environment. However, the films took a much darker, serious turn during The Prisoner of Azkaban, in line with the slowly deepening of the story in the books, and director Alfonso Cuarón wanted a darker, grittier, almost sinister look for the films, which the buildings under the railway arches in Borough Market portrayed perfectly. We'll now take you from the light and airy glass of Leadenhall Market to the dark, cobbled streets of Borough Market. Facing the Leaky Cauldron entrance, turn left to continue down Bull's Head Passage. When you come out onto Gracechurch Street, turn left again. When this road ends and runs into Monument Station and Boots the Chemist, continue forward, veering slightly to the right to walk past Boots. This will take you to King William Street, which will then turn into London Bridge. When you get to the middle of the bridge, stop. This is one of the most sought-after views in London. Here you have the perfect image of the famous Tower Bridge, flanked by the HMS Belfast on the right and the Tower of London on the left. Let's start there. The Tower of London was built by William the Conqueror as a single stone tower in the year 1071. Most visitors to London back then would come in using the river, so William's idea was to build a tower here so people could immediately see how rich and powerful he was. As time has gone on, the structure has been expanded, and now it is a huge series of towers, turrets, walls, and buildings, all of which have had varying histories throughout the centuries. The tower has been used as a fortress, a royal palace, the mint where the country's money was manufactured, and it's even been used as a zoo. The tower was also a notorious prison, housing such inmates as Sir Walter Raleigh, Sir Francis Drake, and even Queen Elizabeth I, who spent time here as a princess. Today, the tower is a fabulous piece of London history, and also the location where the crown jewels are kept. Straight ahead is the iconic Tower Bridge, a stunning piece of Victorian industry and architecture. The bridge was completed in the late 19th century and was intended to have two ways to cross, the bottom and the top. The idea was that horses and carriages could go along the bottom, where the vehicles go today, and pedestrians could climb the stairs in the towers and use the walkways across the top. But as you may imagine, many people didn't want to make the huge climb up and down, so the walkways fell out of use and instead became the haunts of thieves and prostitutes before being closed down in 1910. Today, visitors can buy tickets to go inside and walk across the walkway themselves. To the right is the HMS Belfast, a World War II cruiser that was present at the D-Day landings in Normandy and later saw service in the Korean War. Today, it's permanently moored here as a naval museum. And just behind the ship to the right, you will see the smooth glass globe of City Hall. This is the office of the Mayor of London and those who work with him, and both this building and Tower Bridge feature in the Harry Potter films. In the opening scene of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, the Death Eaters arrive in London and wreak havoc in this area. The first moments of the film show office workers in this exact building start to rise from their desks and stare out the window at the chaos happening outside. Then, in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, the Order travel into London and fly along the River Thames. You are now standing right in their flight path. They travel past Tower Bridge, under London Bridge, and continue along all the way down to the Houses of Parliament and the London Eye. Continue walking across the River Thames. The bridge will turn into London Bridge Road, and here continue to walk forward. The road will begin to curve toward the right. Cross onto the right side of the street, and then turn right onto Stony Street. Walk until you get to number 7. Here you are positioned on the edge of one of the world's most legendary food markets, Borough Market. The first mention of a borough market in London comes from the year 1276, but is believed to have existed on this spot since at least the 11th century. Today, the market sells thousands of specialty foods to the general public, and goods you can taste here will come from all corners of the United Kingdom, as well as parts of Europe. If you're taking this tour during the day, definitely take time to have a browse and a bite, and even a drink here. However, film buffs know Borough Market for its multiple appearances on camera screens. Scenes from Bridget Jones's Diary, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, and of course Harry Potter have all been filmed here. You'll notice this area has a much different atmosphere than Leadenhall Market. The history is alive here, with 500-year-old pubs, an original medieval prison, and the Victorian railway arches above you. This was the ideal setting for the Leaky Cauldron in The Prisoner of Azkaban. There are two buildings here we want you to focus on, number 7 and 8. During the filming of the movies, number 7 was a well-known florist known as Chez Michel. Today, it's now a Mexican restaurant with a prime location here in the historic and popular market. You will see that the restaurant has added quite a bit of art and signage to the wall, which didn't exist when the florist stood here. The original Victorian bricks that you see here were not updated or amended in any way, aside from the addition of some stones around the entrance, for the filming of The Prisoner of Azkaban, as Alfonso Cuarón thought the dark and dingy bricks here were the perfect atmosphere for the Leaky Cauldron. You'll notice the arched doorway here, and that doorway is exactly where Harry walked through to get into the pub. If you're taking this tour in the evening, this area may look familiar, as it is just outside of this shop that the night bus slams to a halt and drops Harry off, via Palmer's Green and Lambeth, squeezing itself between two double-decker buses in the way, setting off a car alarm in the process. As a bonus, we will include a link to a clip of this scene on your app so you can watch it as you stand at the exact spot it was filmed. It's worth noting that the bus used in the film was an actual, functioning, moving bus, and the set makers had to add 8 tons of material into the bottom of the bus to keep it from toppling over as it moved. Today, the bus is preserved at the Warner Brothers studio, so it's still possible to actually step on board. While the interior shots of the Leaky Cauldron were filmed on a soundstage, the skyline and architecture of this area make an appearance in the film, too. After Harry arrives at the Leaky Cauldron and speaks to Cornelius Fudge, he stays the night at the pub. When he awakes in the morning, he looks out of his window and scans the area outside. For that scene, a camera on a crane was erected here, recording footage of Borough Market, Southwark Cathedral, the River Thames, and the myriad other buildings, warehouses, and topsy-turvy facades of this area. In that scene, the footage is unaltered, with no special effects to use at all, just the beautiful surroundings of this historic part of London. Now focus entirely on number 8. What stands here in our world is the Market Porter Pub, but in the world of Harry Potter, this building serves as the Third Hand Emporium in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. This is the location where Harry would meet his hapless future professor, Gilderoy Lockhart. From here, continue walking down Stony Street with number 7 and 8 on your left, and play the next clip as you walk. Feel free to start and stop it as you go if you feel you need more time. Continue walking along the river until you get to the Tate Modern Museum. From here, step onto the Millennium Bridge. As you leave Borough Market, you will enter another world. Time has stood still in this part of London, and the atmosphere is charged with history. Throughout the centuries, the south side of the River Thames was exempt from the laws that governed the City of London, which meant that this neighborhood was a popular haunt for those with less savory interests. Gambling dens, theaters, and brothels would have lined the streets here, and some of those still exist. As the road dead ends on Clink Street, turn left. You will now walk by the Clink Museum, resting on the site of the original Clink Prison. The Clink first began taking prisoners in the 12th century and was operational here right up until the 17th, a long enough period of time for the term the Clink to come into modern-day usage as a slang term for jail. The prison was originally built here at the behest of the Bishop of Winchester, who controlled the lands in this area. Outside of the jurisdiction of the City of London, the bishop could imprison anybody he liked, and he was particularly focused on people who owed him money, and those he saw as having committed religious crimes. The Clink was known to be a chaotic place, where the jailers took bribes from their prisoners to supply them things like extra rations or blankets. The poorer prisoners, who couldn't afford to pay their jailers, would have begged for food or sold their clothing through the grates at the base of this building, right about where you're standing. With the Clink on your left, continue walking under the bricked arch. On your right will be a large mural in two parts. One is a reference to the restaurant that's in this building, and the other is William Shakespeare. His original theater used to exist nearby, and the exact recreation of it is just around the corner. So follow the path to the right once you've passed the murals, then make a left so you're now following along the river. Shakespeare would not have been the only playwright to live in this part of London. Routinely, throughout the centuries, theatres were outlawed in London for numerous reasons, such as the belief that theatre was an affront to God, the belief that theatres attracted thieves and prostitutes, and the idea that theatre could morally corrupt those who were sitting in the audience. This meant that many playwrights could only showcase their work here, south of the river, which led to the creation of a multitude of theatres throughout the centuries, the most famous of those being the Globe. As you continue away along the river, you will soon pass under a bridge. When you come out, follow the path ahead as it curves around a number of restaurants before it finally reaches the Globe. Shakespeare's original theatre was destroyed by a fire, which broke out during a performance of the play Henry VIII on the 29th of June, 1613. So what we have here today is a perfect replica, opened in 1997, that was built entirely to the same specifications of the original building. The only thing that makes this Globe Theatre different to the original is that there are sprinklers attached to the thatched roof in case of fire, again. In fact, this is the only thatched roof in all of London, as thatched roofing was outlawed after the Great Fire of 1666. It took a lot of negotiation with the City Council to get this roof erected, and the man who led the campaign to get the theatre rebuilt using these original building materials was an American actor called Sam Wanamaker. Sam had the idea to rebuild the globe back in the 1970s, and it took literally decades of research, legal wrangling, money raising, and appeals to local government to create the theater that stands here today. Many people thought the idea of rebuilding this theater was ridiculous, and that it would be impossible to recreate the 16th century design, or that people wouldn't even be interested in visiting any attraction on the south side of the River Thames. But Sam Wanamaker persevered, and thanks to him, the works of Shakespeare can now be enjoyed almost entirely as they were when the plays were first written. There is now a second theater on this site, a Jacobean-style theater that operates throughout the colder months, which is called the Sam Wanamaker Theater, in honor of the man who helped rebuild the most famous of London's theaters. For those Harry Potter fans that are well acquainted with the first film, The Philosopher's Stone, the name Wanamaker may be familiar. This is because Sam Wanamaker's daughter Zoe played Madame Hooch, the Quidditch instructor at Hogwarts, in the first Potter film. When facing the theater, you can see the Millennium Bridge to your right. Get onto this bridge and start the next clip. This is a listen and walk clip. Make your way across the bridge as we tell you about its history and its role in the world of Harry Potter. Watch out for Death Eaters as you make your way from the south to the north side of the Thames over the Millennium Bridge. Known colloquially as the Wobbly Bridge, the Millennium Bridge began its life in 1996 as the winning design of a competition held by Southwark Council and the Royal Institute of British Architects. However, the bridge gained international fame in the year 2000 when the structurally unsound bridge opened to the public and quickly began to sway and wobble, nearly coming entirely apart and knocking pedestrians over as they tried to cross it. The bridge had to be immediately closed and spent a further 2 years under construction before finally being reopened to the public. The bridge makes two appearances in the films. Firstly, in The Order of the Phoenix, as Dumbledore's army fly their way toward the Ministry of Magic. The second appearance, in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, is much more dramatic when the bridge becomes the scene of a horrific Death Eater attack. Potter lovers will know that in the novel, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, it is Brockdale Bridge, not the Millennium Bridge, that is targeted by Death Eaters who are quickly escalating their attacks in the Muggle world. But filmmakers decide to change the location of the attack. In the Half-Blood Prince film, it was decided to use the iconic Millennium Bridge instead. After Lord Voldemort tells the Minister of Magic, Cornelius Fudge, to step down and Fudge refuses, Voldemort unleashes his wrath on the people of London, magical and Muggle alike. The opening scene of that movie shows Death Eaters flying over London, destroying everything in their path, including the Millennium Bridge. It's mentioned that many Muggles were injured and some even died in the attack. This shocking display of magic in the Muggle world would lead to the end of Cornelius Fudge's premiership and led to his replacement by Rufus Scrimgeour, a huge turning point in the story of Harry Potter. So why change the bridge for the movie? 1. Because it's an iconic structure in London, and the filmmakers knew the bridge would be recognized all over the world. And then secondly, because of the bridge's history. You'll remember we mentioned that when the bridge was first opened, it wasn't structurally sound, and it wobbled so much that it nearly collapsed into the river. So the filmmakers decided to reference this, blaming the Death Eaters for the problems with the bridge, rather than the architects who designed it. Today, that opening segment is now one of the most iconic and remembered scenes of the Harry Potter film series. Today, hundreds of Potter lovers come to see the bridge for themselves every year, and we are happy to say that the Millennium Bridge is still in one piece and safe from Death Eater attacks, for now. We've included a clip of this on our app, so you can see it for yourself. Walk across the Millennium Bridge. When you get to the other side, continue forward until you reach St. Paul's Cathedral. With the bridge behind you, turn left and walk to the front steps of the church. Designed by architect Christopher Wren and opened to the public in 1711, St. Paul's Cathedral is one of London's most famous buildings. This Anglican church replaces an earlier medieval building that was lost during the Great Fire of London in 1666. Beneath the cathedral sits the largest crypt under any church in Europe, and from that crypt is then possible, for those who work here, to ascend a spiral staircase into the cathedral library. And that staircase appears in the Prisoner of Azkaban film as the Divination Staircase, the spiral steps that lead students up to Professor Trelawney's class. The staircase later appears in the Goblet of Fire as the staircase that leads down from the Defense Against the Dark Arts classes. From here, you have two options of travel. You can now either walk or take a break by traveling by bus to our next Harry Potter location. The walk will take about 10 to 15 minutes, depending on your speed, and the bus journey will take you about 5 to 10 minutes, depending on traffic. The journey to your next stop, however you go, will trace along Fleet Street and the Strand, one of the oldest thoroughfares in London. This road is featured heavily in our City of London tour, available in audio guide, self-guided format on our website, or on our regularly scheduled public tours. We will touch briefly on some of the sites you will pass now as you travel to the next location. But for more in-depth information, you may wish to access the full City of London tour by any of the means mentioned previously. If you wish to walk, turn so your back is to the entrance of the cathedral and walk forward down Ludgate Hill. Continue on the street for the entire duration of the walk and stop when you reach Australia House on your right. You will know you are at the right place when you see the Australian flags all along the building. If you wish to take the bus, turn your back to the entrance of the cathedral and look to your left. Across the street is a bus stop. Get to that bus stop and hop on board bus number 4, 11, 15, 26, or 76. You will take the bus for 5 stops, alighting at Aldwych. From there, you will be able to see Australia House. This is your next stop. However you travel, you may wish to listen to the following information on some of the sites that you will pass along your journey. At the bottom of Ludgate Hill, you will cross Farringdon Street at the large junction. Shortly after, there will be an alleyway on your left, and then another. Tucked down the second alleyway, you will get a glimpse of St. Bride's Church. Designed by Christopher Wren, when this church was built at the end of the 17th century, it was the tallest building in all of London, and today is known as the Journalists' Church, as Fleet Street, the road you're traveling on now, was previously home to the reporting, newspaper, and publishing industry in the UK. Shortly after passing St. Bride's, you will see a sign on the right for the Old Cheshire Cheese. This is one of the oldest and best-known pubs in London, a haunt for people like Charles Dickens, Mark Twain, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Very little has changed inside since it was built in 1667, which makes it one of the best historical pubs in town. A few minutes on from this, you will pass a monument that's right in the middle of the street. It has Queen Victoria on one side and her son, King Edward VII, on the other, and then a dragon on the top. This is Temple Bar, the ceremonial marker that indicates the boundaries of the City of London. You are now leaving the City of London, the oldest part of town, and entering the City of Westminster. Today, most Londoners don't pay attention to this boundary line, as it makes very little difference to our everyday lives. However, the City of London is separate from the rest of our city, and has its own police force and even its own mayor. Just on from Temple Bar on the right are the Royal Courts of Justice. This building contains the High Court and Court of Appeal for the United Kingdom. The structure is quite beautiful and a little whimsical, reminding many people of Sleeping Beauty's castle or even Hogwarts. It's built in a neo-Gothic style, a popular style of architecture in the 19th century that mimicked earlier Gothic styles that were popular around 500 years before. Across the street from the Royal Courts of Justice sits the Church of St. Clement Danes. Another Wren design, this building is now the official site of worship for the Royal Air Force. Looking at the back of the church, you can see a lot of damage, and all of that was caused during World War II, when London was under attack from the German Air Force, a series of bombings that we now refer to as the Blitz. The RAF made the decision to leave the damage on the church as a lasting reminder to people about what happened in London during the Second World War. Just opposite the front of St. Clement Danes is Australia House, your next stop. The longest continuously occupied diplomatic mission in the United Kingdom, and built entirely with marble shipped all the way from Australia, Australia House served as the setting for Gringotts Wizarding Bank. Unlike others on our list, it is the interior of this building that served as the filming set. Long rows of wooden benches and dozens of goblins working away under heavy, sparkling and cobwebbed chandeliers is the sight that greets Harry as Hagrid takes him to the Wizarding Bank for the very first time in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. We've included a clip of that scene here so you can see it. The actual room used for filming is the exhibition room, which is, unfortunately, not open to the public. This was another location that needed very little enhancements, aside from adding some well-placed cobwebs and dust to highlight the age of the bank. The beautiful chandeliers, dark wooden countertops, and gold fixtures are all the real items to be found inside the building. It is possible, however, to visit the exterior of Gringotts Bank, to be found at the Warner Brothers studio. We've included a link in the description of this stop to our blog post that details the studios and the various ways you can get there yourself. It is also worth noting that Australia House makes another appearance during a scene in the 2017 Wonder Woman film, in the scene where Etta Candy is introduced. A polite word with the security officers at the door may reward you with a peek through the windows, but this is not always guaranteed, and you certainly didn't hear about it from us. To get to your next stop, you will need to walk for a few minutes. If you would like to hear about some Harry Potter locations in London that are not included in this walk, play the next clip as you go. Facing the embassy, turn left and continue down the Strand. Keep walking until you see the H&M shop on your right. Take the first right after the shop down the alleyway, and then go left onto William the Fourth Street. Continue until you get to St. Martin's Lane and turn right. Keep a careful eye on your right-hand side until you come to Godwin's Court. Here, turn right and enter the alleyway. We've done our best to squeeze as much Harry Potter into a single tour as possible, but there are still some other locations in town you may wish to visit. Firstly, there's Piccadilly Circus, with a small but important appearance in the books and films. On the run from Death Eaters at Bill and Fleur's wedding in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Harry, Ron, and Hermione apparate straight into central London. In the books, they arrive on Tottenham Court Road and go into a nearby restaurant. However, for the Deathly Hallows Part 1 film, the trio turn up right in front of a passing number 19 bus in the middle of Piccadilly Circus. Hermione tells us, quote, "I used to come here with Mum and Dad." They arrive at night with Piccadilly's world-famous electric lights on display, which lend a little magic of their own to this popular London destination. Just off Piccadilly Circus, up Shaftesbury Avenue, you can spot a row of stone pillars that the trio walk past as Hermione explains to the boys where they are. Somewhere along this road is the cafe where the trio stop to have a rest and end up in a violent duel with Death Eaters, so mind your step. Vauxhall Row, just south of the river, has a small appearance in the Harry Potter books, as it is from a shop on Vauxhall Road that Tom Riddle buys his diary, which would eventually become a horcrux, as detailed in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. In our world, Vauxhall was home to an orphanage built in the 1800s, perhaps the location of the orphanage that Riddle grew up in. London Zoo also makes an appearance in the very first book and film. In the book, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, it is a local zoo that Harry is taken to for his cousin Dudley's 11th birthday. At the zoo, Harry comes face to face with a snake when the glass separating him from a boa constrictor inside a tank disappears and the snake spills out onto the floor. We realize that it was Harry who accidentally caused the removal of the glass, and we later learn that Harry was speaking to the snake in a rare language known as Parseltongue, a huge plot point later in the books. It is the reptile house at the London Zoo that was used during the filming of this scene. This has led many people to, incorrectly, assume the Dudley family had taken Harry to London Zoo. However, when Harry travels to Diagon Alley with Hagrid for the first time, Harry tells him that he has never been to London before, which means the zoo must have been somewhere else. The actual tank used for filming currently holds a black mamba, although in the film the snake is said to be a Burmese python, in a strange departure from the original text. For those who have made the effort to both get to the zoo and pay for entry, you will be rewarded with a small plaque placed inside the reptile enclosure that commemorates the spot where the actual filming took place. And of course, don't forget the Warner Brothers studio. This is the ultimate London location for a Harry Potter lover. These are the actual studios where the Harry Potter movies were filmed. Guests can see the Gryffindor Common Room and Snape's Dungeon, walk down Privet Drive and step onto the night bus, travel along Diagon Alley, fly a broom over the streets of London, drink a butter beer, buy yourself a wand, and so much more. Located on the outskirts of London, the studios are easily accessible by commuter trains and a shuttle bus that collects guests from Watford Rail Station and takes them directly to the studios. We've including links here to our web pages detailing these locations, so if you hear something that catches your interest, just click on the links and get all the information you will need to visit. Hidden away within the topsy-turvy complex of roads and alleys that make up Covent Garden sits Godwin's Court. Lined with wonky buildings, crooked houses, and bulging windows, Godwin's Court is every inch Diagon Alley. In fact, the set of Diagon Alley built at the Warner Brothers Studios bears a very strong resemblance to Godwin's Court, leaving some confident that this is the real Diagon Alley. Take a look at the clip we've included on the description of this stop on your app and compare for yourself the alley that appears on screen and the one you're standing in right now. However, many people believe that J.K. Rowling's inspiration for Diagon Alley came from another path, just around the corner. Once you've taken some Potter-inspired photographs and selfies here, continue on, and we'll show you the other real Diagon Alley. Retrace your steps and leave Godwin's Court, back onto St. Martin's Lane. Turn left and walk until you see Cecil Court on your right. Walk along Cecil Court. This is your next stop. A small alleyway just off the bustling Charing Cross Road, Cecil Court is believed by many to have been the inspiration for Diagon Alley. Evidence for this, for a start, is that in the Wizarding World, the Leaky Cauldron, which holds the entrance to Diagon Alley, sits just off Charing Cross Road. Secondly, in our world, Charing Cross Road is known for its multitude of bookshops, many of which specialize in magic and the occult, so it's clear to see why J.K. Rowling decided that the entrance to Diagon Alley should be here. In fact, Rowling has stated the reason why she chose to set the real Diagon Alley here when she said, quote, "Charing Cross Road is famous for its bookshops, both modern and antiquarian. This is why I wanted it to be the place where those in the know go to enter a different world." The court here is lined with original Victorian shop fronts and sells a wide variety of antique books, books relating to witchcraft, and all aspects of magic. In fact, the first shop on the far side of the court is actually called the Witch Ball. Visitors here may also take note that it is possible to have your fortune read at some of the shops, though sadly not by Professor Trelawney. Here on Cecil Court, you will also find Watkins Books, which claims to be the oldest occultist and mystical bookshop in the entire world. And keen Harry Potter fans with an eagle eye may also spot a large display of Gringotts banknotes located in one of the shop windows here. It is safe to say that Cecil Court has a touch of magic to it, easily believable as the entrance into Harry's world on Diagon Alley. Next, you will come out onto the well-known Charing Cross Road. Keep in mind that in the books, Harry and Hagrid walk down Charing Cross Road itself in the Philosopher's Stone. Whilst Harry is on the night bus in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, he travels down Charing Cross, and Minas Tirith cars drive down this road in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Continue walking away from St. Martin's Lane until you reach the end of Cecil Court. Here, turn left onto Charing Cross Road and walk until you get to Trafalgar Square on your right. Cross the street into the square. Of Victorian origin, Trafalgar Square was built to be an attractive addition to the then unpopular National Gallery. The idea was that the beauty and sculpture in the square would draw visitors to the center of town and then into the gallery. It's safe to say this succeeded beyond all expectation, and quite quickly, the famous fountains and Nelson's Column in the square became must-see tourist destinations in their own right. Throughout its history, the square has been used to celebrate, like at the end of the Second World War. It's been used for protests, such as student protests recently and the suffragettes in the early 1900s, and parties, numerous parades and festivals throughout each year. This is also where London's official Christmas tree is erected, a yearly gift from Norway thanking Britain for support during the Second World War. And occasionally, large screens are constructed in the square, which show performances of ballet, opera, sporting events, and the premiere screening of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. It was here, in Trafalgar Square, on the 7th of July 2011, that the final Harry Potter film began its premiere celebrations. On a huge stage erected near Nelson's Column stood Daniel Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, Emma Watson, J.K. Rowling, and dozens of others who spoke to the crowd of thousands who had gathered here to watch this once-in-a-lifetime event. A huge screen was erected where clips and trailers could be shown to members of the public who would stay here to watch the film, and we've included a small clip of this so that you can see it for yourself. However, the actors went elsewhere. Leaving Trafalgar Square, the cast and Rowling herself walked the world's longest red carpet, certified by the Guinness Book of World Records, to Leicester Square, where the film debuted simultaneously at three different cinemas. Trafalgar Square also gets a small cameo during the opening flight battle of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince as the Death Eaters fly over central London. Just across the street from Nelson's Column is a statue of King Charles I on horseback. He is facing down a long main road, Whitehall, and this is the road to walk down first. Keep Trafalgar Square behind you and walk straight ahead. Turn left onto Great Scotland Yard and stop at the corner of Scotland Place on your right. Here, you are in an area known as Whitehall, named after the Palace of Whitehall that stood here in the 16th and 17th centuries. Today, the entire area is referred to as Whitehall and is the base of the government of the United Kingdom and thousands of Muggle politicians. It makes sense, then, that Whitehall and Old Scotland Yard were used to represent the magical counterpart to our Muggle organizations in the Harry Potter universe. The area is portrayed first on film in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix for the trip that Mr. Weasley and Harry take to the Ministry of Magic. In addition to the logical reasons for choosing this location as a setting for the ministry, location scouts also love the curve of the road here, the tall buildings and the gleaming white stone, and the beautifully arched bridge you can see to your right. In fact, they love the look of that bridge so much, they built a second one. If you look back down the road you've just walked along, you're looking at the location of the second bridge. It was built to span across the street here for two reasons. Firstly, because they love the look of the bridge, and secondly, because they found the doorways to the buildings along here rather ugly and wanted to cover them up. We've included photos of this for you to see for yourself. Here you will find the exteriors used for the Ministry of Magic during filming for the Polyjuice Potion scenes in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. In fact, if you look across the street to the sign that says Scotland Place, this is exactly where Ron stands when he awaits Mafalda Hotkirk's arrival. To your right, you'll see a large metal gate, and this is where Hermione is standing in the same scene, hidden under the invisibility cloak. However, in the film, they used CGI to make the gate look wooden instead of metal, as I thought that better fit their idea of the ministry. In the books and the films, there is a red telephone box that stands outside the Ministry of Magic that wizards use to access the ministry. From the phone box, one must dial 62442, or magic, and the phone booth acts as a lift, taking visitors down underneath the ground to the ministry. The red phone box used in the film was actually a prop brought in specifically for shooting, so sadly, no journey to the ministry can be made any longer. Walk down Scotland Place and turn right onto Whitehall Place. The road will dead end on Whitehall, and here turn left. Keep walking in this direction, but cross over to the opposite side of Whitehall. A few minutes along, you will come to the big black gates of Downing Street on your right. Stop here. Built in the 18th century, Downing Street was previously a country lane with around two dozen houses on it. Today, there are only two. Number 11, home of the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and number 10, the home of the Prime Minister. In the world of Harry Potter, number 10 hosts a magical portrait with which the Muggle Prime Minister and the Minister for Magic can communicate. We first learn about this portal in the opening chapter of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. In this opening scene, Cornelius Fudge appears in the portrait to tell the Prime Minister, who is not named, about the return of Lord Voldemort, feeling that this is a threat not only to the magical community, but to the Muggle one as well. In the books, this is an incredibly important and surprising moment, as it's the first time we find out that the Muggle world is actually aware of the magical world on some level. However, although it's an incredibly important plot point in the book, the scene was never included in any of the films. Later, Downing Street is referenced again, as it is here that Kingsley Shacklebolt works during his time as bodyguard to the Muggle Prime Minister, playing a kind of double agent between the Muggle and wizarding communities. Facing Downing Street, walk to your left, continuing down Whitehall, away from Trafalgar Square. Walk straight down the road until you get to the entrance to Westminster Underground Station. Take the steps down and follow the signs to the ticket hall. Here, we will be taking a small trip on the London Underground, reversing the path that Harry and Mr. Weasley took to the Ministry of Magic. It is to Westminster Underground Station that Mr. Weasley and Harry arrive at when visiting the Ministry of Magic in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. At the station, Mr. Weasley struggles at the barriers, not sure how to work the exits properly, much like many of us during our first visit to London. For the filming of this scene, Westminster Underground Station was closed for an entire day, an amazing occurrence that has never been allowed for any other movie production. We've included a clip of that scene so that you can watch it while you're here. Once you've done that, go through the barriers and take the Circle and District lines going east. Alight at Monument Station and change trains to the Northern Line. Get the train going north and get off at Angel Station. When you exit Angel Station, you will be on the main road. Turn left and walk until you get to the big traffic junction next to the Angel Pub. cross the street south, and then right, so that you're on the opposite diagonal corner of the station. Start walking away from the station, with Jamie's Italian restaurant on your left. Continue down the main road, Pentonville Road, until you get to Milne Street. Turn left here, and this will take you to Claremont Square. Tucked away on an unassuming street in Islington lies Claremont Square, the location of Sirius Black's familial residence, number 12 Grimald Place. This was the perfect location to film Grimald Place, as it fits the description in the books of being a small square with terraced houses, just up the road from King's Cross Station. For the movies, it was numbers 23 to 29 that were actually used for filming. In the books, number 12 Grimald Place had for centuries been the home of the Black family. The house is invisible to anybody who does not know it exists, and it's protected by a Fidelius charm, which also makes it unplottable. This means that Muggles only see numbers 11 and 13 on the residential street that the house sits on, believing that the missing number 12 was simply a mistake made when the houses were numbered. So if you can't quite see it, don't feel bad. After Dumbledore died, the house was abandoned by the Order of the Phoenix, and then later used by the trio when they were on the run from the Ministry of Magic, before being abandoned again when a Death Eater followed Hermione back to the house. There is no mention of the building after the Second Wizarding War, and as of now, we don't know if Harry or his family ever returned, but keep an eye out while you're here. Get back onto Pentonville Road and turn left. Continue down the road until you get to King's Cross Station. Go through the main entrance, with the brownstones, and into the atrium where the shops and the departures boards are. Once you've stepped into the hall, walk straight ahead, keeping the departure boards to your right. Right before you reach the edge of the station, platform 9 3/4 will be on the right-hand side. Facing the station, look to the other huge Victorian station to your left. This is St. Pancras Station. In the Chamber of Secrets, when Ron and Harry can't get to platform 9 3/4, they decide to take Ron's dad's flying Ford Anglia. For the movies, the scene was filmed right here, with St. Pancras Station in the background. We've also included a clip for you to view. Once you've seen that, go through the main entrance to King's Cross Station, the one with the brown stones. Walk into the atrium, where the shops and the departure boards are. Once you've stepped into this hall, walk straight ahead. Right before you reach the edge of the station, platform 9 3/4 will be on your right. Once you've seen that, enter the main entrance of King's Cross Station, the ones with the brown... Every Potterhead knows that platform 9 3/4 is a location at King's Cross Station that the Hogwarts Express departs from on the 1st of September every year and arrives back to at the end of the school year. In fact, the very final scene in the last book and film is set right here, on the most famous train platform in the world. For Harry Potter fans, a visit to London wouldn't be complete without a visit to King's Cross, and the station does not disappoint. Now, owing to the layout of the station, it's not actually possible to pass through a barrier between platforms 9 and 10. Firstly, for those Muggles among us, we would never be able to see it. But the second reason is that there is no actual barrier between the two platforms. J.K. Rowling admitted that when she was imagining King's Cross in her mind, she got it confused and was actually imagining Euston Station. When the movies were being filmed here, it was actually platforms 4 and 5 that stood in for 9 and 10. Fret not, however, as the designers of the new King's Cross Station have got you covered, having installed an entrance to platform 9 3/4 around the corner from the platforms being used for other railway traffic. And luckily for us, the Ministry of Magic has come up with a clever way to allow visitors to experience the magic of platform 9 3/4, as it is here that they have frozen a luggage trolley partially the way through the magical barrier. Those of us who have sought out the platform will be rewarded with an opportunity to get their photographs taken right outside the barrier. Next to the photo opportunity is the fabulous platform 9 3/4 shop, full of sweets and scarves, wands and wizards, books and bludgers. A visit to the shop is the perfect way to complete your Harry Potter tour. From the Philosopher's Stone to the end of the Deathly Hallows, you have now traveled with us through all of London, following the footsteps of the world's most famous wizards. If you've enjoyed your Harry Potter tour with us and wish to take another self-guided tour, visit our website at www.freetoursbyfoot.com. There you will find self-guided tours of Rome and London, the Beatles, the East End, and more, including food tours. You will also find information on other audio tours that we offer, and there you can see our full tour schedule. Tours by Foot offers pay-what-you-like walking tours on a daily basis here in London, and we'd love to have you join us. Simply book online. Thank you for touring with Tours by Foot today, and we hope you've enjoyed every step of your journey.